Welcome back, and you're listening to Bush Tea on Guardian Radio 96.9, and we're in our final segment this evening, and we're talking to Duke and Lisa Wells and John Cox about the Bahamian Project. It's an interesting photography project that is in process, and before the break, we were talking about what kind of Bahamian qualifies to be included in this project. And what I wanted to get an idea from is, and we had gone over it a little bit in the previous segment, but what is the ultimate goal of the project? I know it is to eventually create this sort of national archive of photography, but I thought it was interesting you mentioned that during the course of the project you would be having workshops that could teach up-and-coming photographers or young people who are interested in learning about photography. How much of that is part of the project and what you hope to achieve?
I think it plays a big part. Since we joined the community of artists at Pop-Op Studios, our goal has been to raise the consciousness of the Bahamian society towards photography, and to get photography respected as another art form, as another medium. When I first arrived in the Bahamas 16 years ago, there was virtually no photography industry, no photography market at all, and it was so I had to seek other ways to, you know, occupy my time. Web design was one of them, but over the years, I saw photography grow as a market, as an industry, and as an art form. And so our goal would be to raise that awareness of photography as an art form. And one of the best ways to do that, I think, is through portraiture. Back in the States, we would give lectures and seminars on photography. And I've found that young people view the world differently through a viewfinder than they view it in real life. And also, portraiture was one of the first reasons or one of the first things that photography ever got involved in. If you look back in the early days of photography, the photographers like Matthew Brady and Edward Steichen and some of the people who were like the grandfathers of photographer dabbled almost exclusively in portraiture, at least for a while. Mm-hmm. Because it's an excellent way to define. You can paint, a lot of people paint portraits, but you'll notice that they paint them usually nowadays from photographs. Because photographs have, photography has the opportunity to capture that instance in a person's life, that moment, the defining moment that kind of can define the character of the people. And so the goal of the project would be to define this period in Bahamian history, this time period that we're going through right now.
John, I wanted to ask you, in terms of the country's art history and what this project has the potential to contribute, how important is it that these images are captured and then that something like a portrait gallery is established?
Oh, hugely, because it goes as far back as, you know, some of the earliest kind of developments of art are there to basically to facilitate the narrative of history. You know, if you go back to, I mean, even, which isn't the beginning of art, but you go back to the High Renaissance, like the religious narratives are largely captured through imagery, right? Pictures and sculptures and so on. So it's really important to do this. I mean, even if you put the photography side, part of it aside, which I think is major, just the act that they're kind of documenting elements of the Bahamian culture in a certain way is hugely important, very, very important. I do want to make a note, because this is bothering me. I did say that we only had one exhibition of pure photography in the gallery, and I was wrong. We actually had two. There was a Developing Blackness exhibition as well,
right?
Both of them curated by Krista Thompson.
Right.
So if it wasn't for Krista Thompson, we had had no single photography exhibitions in the gallery, so I wanted to clear that.
Right. Duke, and Lisa could speak to this as well. You mentioned sponsorship has been an issue during this first year of the project. How is that going, and how are you how is the project being received by potential sponsors? What kind of support is it getting?
Well, actually, it's being received quite well. It's, you know, sponsorship is going a bit slowly. Everybody that we've approached has been seemingly very impressed. They have all seemed to recognize the importance of it, and they've all seemed to, you know, it's they receive it very positively. Mm-hmm. Still, though, the actual sponsorship, and companies have, there have been some companies who have sponsored it, you know, have put in some funds, but it's quite a costly project. I mean, we do have fairly large expenses with, you know, we want to print these on canvas, these mm-hmm. photographs on canvas, and very, very large, mm-hmm. and frame them and what. And so it is, you know, the costs are significant. And sponsorship, sorry.
No, that's okay. I was just going to say, maybe some people hear this and go, oh, they're just taking pictures. They don't have our photographs. They don't have an appreciation for what something like this entails and what it costs. Are you able to sort of give us an idea, roughly? I mean, you may not want to mention figures, but just in terms of painting a picture of just that this is not...
Well, I can say, I guess, you know, we want to have, for the exhibition, there's going to be 40 photographs printed and framed, and that alone is going to cost in the range of about $30,000.
That's just with a significant discount from Aiken Photography, who's doing our printing. Mm-hmm. But the images are 20 by 30, will be the small images. We'd like to make the images 30 by 40 if we could get the funding. And they're printed on archival canvas, mm-hmm. and then framed. You know, some of them are double framed to separate the tone of the background to the wood. So it does become expensive. There's props involved and a lot of other expenses, particularly as we move to the Family Islands, mm-hmm. there will be travel and lodging expenses and per diems that we need to pay. And we need to buy the disposable cameras and do the advertising and marketing necessary to attract young people to the project. So it can become pretty expensive. And we knew that sponsorship would be an uphill battle, but I don't think we realized how steep that hill would be.
Yeah, it is a challenge. I mean, Erica, you brought something up that I think I'd just like to add on to a little bit. I think that there is this kind of hierarchy of art practice, mm-hmm. And I think it's not only in this country, but I think that oftentimes people will put through their own kind of ignorance, whether it be deliberate or like innocent, they will lower the practice of photography below like painting and sculpture and that kind of thing, because these are the kind of high art forms. Sure. And photography, oftentimes people feel like it's an easy practice, it's something that everyone can do. Mm-hmm. I have a phone, I'm a photographer, you know. I mean, I think that, but what Duke and Lisa are really doing is kind of, I think through the workshops that will happen at NAGB and Pop-Up, they will really be able to put in context the history of this practice and the discipline that goes involved. And there's a tradition of portrait photography, there's a tradition of portrait painting that's outside of the other kind of discipline. So I think it's important for people to begin to do that. So I think sometimes, you know, it goes back to our education. You know, a lot of people, you know, a lot of bank managers who are sitting around listening to the project and go, oh, this sounds interesting, still have a very limited appreciation of what goes into these kinds of practices. And so when you say, oh, I need, you know, $50,000 to frame the artwork or to run through the studio process, they're like, I don't understand why. And it's because they don't have an appreciation of what, you know, of what it takes to do this work, which is real and not just something that Duke and Lisa invented, you know, for the project. There's you know,
examples.
There's examples and you know, in years and years of this being developed. So we'll get there. I think that I'm positive and confident that the project will get picked up. More sponsors will come. I find that people tend to respond better to what they can see, mm-hmm. than what you tell them. A lot of times people have a difficult time like projecting through proposals what you're actually talking about. But once they do this exhibition and they see it, I think people will then go, oh, now I see what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll go into, it'll be, you know, it will develop. I'm positive of that.
Right.
Another challenge is that this is a small town, and so all the organizations, all the charities, all the individuals who are seeking funding or sponsorship are seeking it from the same companies and the same individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them have been around for 50, 60, 70, 80 years, and these companies have been giving them money and keeping them afloat. And so for them to suddenly give this project money would mean taking it from some other worthwhile charity or increasing the amount, the percentage that they're spending on sponsorship.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it does take a little bit of understanding, and it may take a little time before people see the value. One of the important aspects of this project, though, is that while other very worthwhile causes are good to contribute money to, oftentimes those causes and the money spent on them is consumed very quickly. This is more of a long-term project, and it's something that, you know, 30 and 50 years from now we'll still be doing good, we'll still be affecting and influencing young Bahamians. Another aspect of funding this project is that many other very worthwhile charities focus on small segments of society, and that's good, and that's vital, and it's necessary. I'm not trying to discourage funding those organizations. But this project speaks to all Bahamians, and all Bahamians in the future, Bahamians locally, and all Bahamians around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so as the exhibition, particularly when the exhibition travels, I think that it speaks to a very, very large audience, probably the largest of any of the charities that I can, you know, that I can think of offhand.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's some, you know, value to that as well.
Okay.
But John's right. There's a lot of people look at photography as something you do with a cell phone and you post it on Facebook or Instagram, and they don't understand why we would need so much money to do a project like this. But there are expenses, and the photography that we're doing is I think, or I'm trying to make it, very high quality and kind of the style of Josef Karsh or Irving Penn or something. Although I don't aspire to be as good as those photographers, but we are trying to do it in that style, and that does take a little extra effort and a little extra money.
Right. And how are you going about in terms of educating your potential sponsors or just members of the public in terms of the Bahamian Project? I'm on Facebook probably more than I should be, and I see stuff popping up time and again. But what is being done from that perspective?
Well, we maintain a very active website, BahamianProject.com, which in the last several months has risen to be one of the highest traffic sites in the Bahamas, and particularly because of Lisa's wonderful blogging. Every time we photograph someone, she puts up some snapshots, mm-hmm. outtakes of the session, and blogs and tells, you know, a little story about how the session went and what, maybe why we photographed that particular person. And that blog has become very popular.
Mm-hmm. And the blog is, there's a link on the blog to the, on the main webpage?
There is, yes. You can, if you go to BahamianProject.com, you can access the blog, mm-hmm. from there.
You know, Duke, you raised a couple of points, and so did John, in terms of potential sponsors maybe not having an appreciation just through lack of knowledge or whatever it is. Are you encountering any other, and you also mentioned, you know, these are the same institutions who are being approached by everyone, but do you see any other hurdles that you're having to overcome to sort of get the ball rolling in the way that you want it to roll? Do you think it's just a matter of waiting for the economy to kind of catch itself? Or do you think it's more ingrained? It's more like a cultural shift. Well, not a cultural shift, but you know what I mean.
I think it's kind of all of the above. I do think the economy being strained for the last couple of years does cause people to be more cautious and more selective about what they've done. I think Duke brought up an interesting point that there's a kind of a historical collaborative dynamic that exists between certain companies and certain charities, and they repeatedly give money and support other things. When things get tight, it's kind of hard to see into or to begin a new collaborative relationship. But I also think that it is as a result of people's just lack of understanding. I think if you went to someone, you said, listen, I need to build a house, they understand what that means. Right. They understand that you need foundation, you need blocks, you need wood, you need a plumber, you need a mechanic, you need an electrician and so on. They understand the kind of guts, forgive the expression, of the operation. But for us, in this project, for Duke and Lisa in this project, there's less understanding of the inner working. So there's a difficulty in relating to maybe the cost of things. But I think Duke brings up a very interesting point in that there's no cotton candy effect here in that respect. The work that is done stays forever.
Right.
And there's something about that, that is unique. I think all charitable work is noble. But in this particular scenario, what you're doing is like you're etching your name on something that's going to stay there forever. Because Duke says some of the urgency is to capture some of the people because they are passing away, and they were in a unique moment now where so many of the very, very older generation people who are responsible for the Constitution and all these things are still around, and we're able to put them in a context that makes it accessible because people's sensibilities change. We're becoming much more visual and tactile now through the social media and that kind of thing. And that's how people, you know, learn and express themselves and see and kind of see themselves in the history of their own country. And because of technology, we're allowed to do that. And I mean, photography is probably one of the most kind of dynamic technological advances in history in terms of capturing and making plastic in a way our environment, that it's a very important thing. And in the grand scheme of things, it's fairly new, the practice. I don't know the history of photography, but it's less than 200 years old, I know.
Yes, yes.
So, you know, it's a major thing. So I think that's a big part of it. And as I said before, we are show me and then I'll figure it out. You know what I mean? I think people need to see first, and right now they're not seeing anything except for the things that are being posted. And of course, the real meat is the exhibition.
Right, because you're not showing anyone.
No.
Anyone those photographs in terms of what will be finally presented in the exhibition.
Yes, the only photograph that's actually been revealed to the public is the Peanuts Taylor one. Our goal is to kind of keep them under wraps until after the exhibition. And then we will be with Matt Cromwell, filmmaker Matt Cromwell, we're going to be producing a 30-minute made-for-TV documentary that will show the progress or the making of the Bahamian portrait collection. This is the Bahamian project, but the actual collection of images will be called the Bahamian collection.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll have a documentary movie about how we made that. And then Lisa documents the progress of the project on the blog.
Okay. And are there plans for any other kind of offshoots, a book or?
Yes. We do want to make a coffee table book eventually. That'll come after the first year, sometime when we have probably midway through the second year or something. But yes, there are plans for a book and
yet additional funding will be needed.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah,
yeah, especially for a coffee table book.
Yes, yeah. We want to make something very nice and something that people can keep as sort of a keepsake or whatever. So, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. I hate to even bring this up, but I have to ask, have you reached out to the government on any level in terms of, I mean, I know NAGB is sort of like a quasi-government agency and is, you know, is supplemented by the government, but what sort of response have you received? Have you investigated using that as an avenue?
Well, we have met with the Ministry of Youth, Sports, and Culture, and they received it quite well, it seemed. So I'm thinking, I mean, we haven't received any funding from the government at all, but that is something that we are still going to
pursue.
I should say that we're artists, we're photographers, we're not really that good at raising funds or handling sponsorship, and it seems every time we talk with someone, they give us some new ideas and some new insight as to how to do that, but we're novices at it, and I think that we'll get better in the second year. And like John said, after the exhibition mounts and is up for 90 days, I think more people will understand the complexities and the necessity of such a thing. And if it starts traveling to other areas where the Bahamas has consulate offices or embassies, perhaps it's something that the Ministry of Tourism would want to get behind, because what we're doing basically is showing the good of the Bahamas, the beauty of the Bahamas through its people, rather than just the old sun, sand, and sea that everyone seems to be pushing nowadays.
Right.
And there's a huge marketability thing, possibilities with a work like this. We have the original works that are being made and framed and so on and so forth. And then the idea that the show is easy to ship around because of the nature of the work itself, but there's also rights and interest. There's all kinds of spin-offs, financial spin-offs that could become quite beneficial to the project becoming its own kind of sustainable kind of system, so that works.
Okay. One last goal I wanted to mention is our goal would be to get the collection, and hopefully the government would get involved in creating a national portrait gallery. But it will be important when this exhibition goes down after 90 days at the NAGB, and as some of the images start to travel, we're hoping that the College of the Bahamas or the government or the NAGB or someone could take this as a permanent collection. So it's important for us to find a home for these images.
Okay, well, we just have literally 5 seconds left. Just tell us the website again and how people can reach you before we sign off.
Well, it's bahamianproject.com, and you can reach us through the contact form on that site, or at my email address is lisa@bahamianproject.com. We also have a Facebook page. You can contact us through that. And
okay, great. Thanks so much for joining me this evening. And
thank
I want to thank our listeners for tuning in. We hope you'll tune in again next week, same time on Guardian Radio 96.9. Have a great evening.